Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 34 degrees under overcast skies. Today's Tuesday, January 10th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A planned renovation of Pacific High School will either move ahead or go back to the drawing board tonight when the Sitka Assembly decides whether to approve preliminary designs. A major remodel of the alternative high school was approved by the school board last month. The plans call for large classrooms with modular walls, a commons area, and a roof deck that can be used by students. The city of Sitka owns the public school buildings, and some assembly members expressed concern about the roof in December. They worried that a flat roof is a poor choice for rainy Sitka. The proposed roof, in fact, has a low slope, but assembly members asked for alternate designs. They will be presented tonight, and the assembly will decide whether to approve them. The assembly also will discuss whether to establish a rebate program for energy-efficient appliances. Such a program would sunset in June of 2013. The materials made available before the meeting did not spell out how the rebate program will be funded. The assembly meets tonight at 6 p.m. inside Harrigan Centennial Hall. Raven News will provide live coverage. An investigating officer has recommended dropping the charges against the sole survivor of a 2010 Coast Guard helicopter crash that killed three crewmen from Air Station Sitka. The Associated Press obtained a copy of Captain Andrew Norris's report. Lieutenant Lance Leone was charged with failing to navigate around safety hazards and with negligently causing the deaths of two of the crewmen aboard the MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter. According to the AP, Norris doesn't say Leone was blameless in the flight, but that the military can't clearly draw links between any errors in navigation and the crash. Norris's recommendation that the charges be dropped was received as good news by Leone's family, but as KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the case could still proceed to a full court-martial.
In December, the Coast Guard held an Article 32 hearing. It's like a grand jury proceeding in civilian court where evidence is laid out against a defendant. Captain Andrew Norris presided over the hearing. He's called the investigating officer in military parlance. And according to the report obtained by AP and confirmed by John Smith, Leone's private attorney, Norris is recommending the charges be dropped.
I got the text from John, Lance's lawyer.
That's Leone's mother, Heather Rice, who says she and her son were having lunch when they heard about Norris's recommendation.
I heard Lance say dropped, and I just... my shoulders dropped. It was like, wow. I'm all goosebumps right now. Look at that.
Rice describes the news as a black cloud being lifted.
We couldn't believe it. We looked at each other and I said, really? But we still have to go on from this. The Admiral has not made the decision. So this hasn't ended yet. So I keep telling people, keep the gales in your sails, because this isn't over yet.
Leone himself is represented by private and military attorneys who have advised him not to speak with the media. Smith, his private attorney, declined to comment when contacted Monday afternoon at his home near Washington, D.C. Coast Guard spokeswoman Lieutenant Veronica Colbath says Norris's recommendation is one more piece of information in the grand scheme of the crash investigation. It will be reviewed by Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, who commands the Coast Guard in Alaska. He's referred to in this case as the convening authority.
The convening authority will review the investigating officer's report and recommendations and decide how to proceed with the case.
Ostebo can follow the recommendations by dropping the charges, or he can send the case on to a full court-martial. He can also decide to handle the matter internally. Colbath says Norris's report is, quote, not releasable while proceedings are underway. Besides being given to Ostebo, the report was shared with attorneys in the case, and Colbath says there's no timeline for Ostebo to make his decision.
The story's not over yet. I mean, it's not over.
That's Lieutenant Colonel John Farr, retired from the Army's Judge Advocate General Corps, and now an attorney in private practice in Anchorage. He's not directly involved in the case, but has extensive experience in military law. Farr says the Leone family has every right to be happy with the recommendation from the Article 32 hearing, but should also know that convening authorities, like Ostebo in this case, are notoriously independent-minded.
They should be mindful of that. However, the Article 32 officer is not likely to look at it any different than a military jury would if they actually end up in front of a military jury. So there should be a certain amount of comfort in that fact. But any positive news like this is something that should be welcome.
Farr has said in previous interviews that acquittals in cases such as this are common. It's a thought he reiterated in light of Norris's recommendation. Farr says the way he interpreted Norris's recommendation suggests to him that Norris might have found probable cause to charge Leone, but based on Leone's service record, doesn't think that he should face a full court-martial. Farr believes a jury would feel similarly.
In other words, if it's a good service member that's been diligent and seems deserving because they've served their country and served the military and had a good career, then judges and juries, military judges and juries, are very reluctant to just completely end that because of a mistake.
Farr says his personal opinion is that the charges have already done career-ending damage. But Leone's mother, Heather Rice, says her son still loves the Coast Guard and wants not only to be cleared of the charges against him, but also to continue his career. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
When the end finally came for Sheldon Jackson College 4 years ago, it was fast. In June of 2007, the Sitka Assembly met on a Tuesday and voted down a request from the college for a $1 million emergency loan. On Friday, the school shut its doors. Reporter Diana Saverin lived on campus last summer as Sheldon Jackson reemerged as the permanent home of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. In part one of this story yesterday, Saverin looked at SJ's history and tradition and the college's abrupt decline. In part two today, Saverin examines how the sudden closure brought the school's problems into sharp focus and set the stage for its dramatic renewal. Her story begins with former SJ professor Scott Harris on the day he learned he was unemployed.
We heard that there was an all-staff meeting, all-staff, all-faculty meeting. There's very few of those. And then, you know, we met at like Friday, maybe 3:30, 3 o'clock or so, and we're told that the college was going to close down. Everyone was laid off immediately, and I got on the phone and making some phone calls. you know, it's interesting, my parents were in town, and we were going to go on one of these boat cruises that Friday evening, so I walked up to my dad and said, "Hey, Dad, guess what? I just got laid off." Within a couple of weeks, everyone was out of there.
Yeah, our population did take a little bit of a blip there because there were quite a few employees here. A lot of people worked here. But it was interesting for me this last summer when I came on and I walked into offices that looked like somebody had just been there. And no one had been there for 3 years. I mean, coffee cups still standing on a desk, papers lying on a desk, pen. Many of the people just left.
The tension between the college and the town, which existed well before the denial of the loan, continued even after the people filling the campus filed out without warning. Gary Paxton has served on Sheldon Jackson's Board of Trustees for years before its closure.
The city factually has not been a help in this. Since they closed, we have asked the city for a variety of help, and they have not been a help. My view, in any measurement, they've been a barrier in a way. They've made us pay property tax the whole time. They did not have to do that. It was a decision made by the assembly. The attorney told the assembly it was up to the assembly's decision whether or not to make us pay property tax. And they said we had to do it. Well, here we are going through, trying to prevent going through bankruptcy so we can find an end game that's good for the town. And the city's making us pay property tax for $120,000 or $30,000 a year for 5 years. It was distasteful and it was unchristian and it was wrong to do, but they did that.
So the campus stood there as the Sheldon Jackson trustees searched for a solution. Plywood covered the windows of its 20 buildings as they braved Alaskan winters. One institution, the University of Dubuque, expressed interest in a possible partnership, which never got off the ground. And there were persistent rumors that someone, maybe a cruise line, would buy the property. But over time, it became clear no one actually wanted it. Even for the state senator, Bert Stedman, who declined to speak for the story, the potential was hard to see.
He was really concerned that the Fine Arts Camp could do this because all he saw, and I'm not trying to minimize Bert's position, was all the deferred maintenance and how are they ever going to do that. He's a very practical man, and he just said, "Boy, I don't know how they're going to do that." I mean, he looked at the Hames, but all he could see with the Hames was, "That's not like you dumb guy, but he's $1 million, $10 million worth of maintenance."
Roger Smith, the executive director of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp in Alaska Arts Southeast, saw beyond the deserted buildings. Because of the organization's education mission and the lack of other interest, the SJ trustees gave him the campus after 4 years.
I got a call from the executive manager, John Holst. He says, well, if you want it, you can have it. So it was a kind of a wild phone call, unexpected, and it felt like it wasn't going to happen at all. And then all of a sudden, it felt victorious one minute and the next minute daunting. When you step off the edge of something and you know you're completely committed and there isn't any way to stop the momentum, I mean, it was just like jumping into a really, really fast river. Or, you know, pushing off the bank in a little kayak, knowing that you know, you weren't going to get out till the end. And so that was, you know, it was daunting. Everything about it's been daunting.
As Roger experienced this mix of feelings at his step forward, those embedded in SJ's history could not help but feel the loss of the advancement it once offered to so many Alaska Natives. A source of advancement many would like to see more of today.
It's been a long road to get where we are. I don't know whether the road is good enough now or not. I feel that we had made SJ and kept it as a high school where you could take the top-notch students with education that we had, that we'd been much further ahead with that type of education. I think it was so... The people that really know the school, this is heartbreaking to even... I know they're doing things with it now, but it's not our school anymore.
Some continue to mourn the fact that the SJ that once offered so much opportunity to the Native community is irretrievably gone. Yet the fact remains that for the 4 years the building sat above the harbor unused, SJ wasn't extending the road Isabella spoke of. When Roger jumped off that cliff, as he phrased it, by accepting the campus in February, he created a whole new road, one whose end remains far out of sight. In Sitka, I'm Diana Saverin.
Reporter Diana Saverin is a Kingsley Trust Fellow at Yale University. Other voices heard in this report were former Sitka Assemblyman John Holst, who became manager of the campus during its closure period, and Tlingit Elder Isabella Brady, who attended Sheldon Jackson School in the 1940s. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for mostly cloudy skies, chance of snow, highs around 36. This is KCAW.